I'm the first one to admit I don't have all the answers. You want to be very careful that you're not Miss Pollyanna. Well, just say no. When all the girls are leaving out another girl, you invite her to sit with you. When everybody else has Palm Pilots and cell phones, you just say, those things aren't important to me. I know what's valued in the world. You know, oh, come on. Your children will laugh you out of the room. You need to recognize how difficult the task is that we're asking kids to do. And that don't, I just heard a lunch with mutual friends yesterday of a friend in our neighborhood who's buying a bigger house. And don't you know the conversation around the table? What do you think? What's everybody talking about, these people who are buying a bigger house? Do you think everybody is saying, good for them, we're so happy for them? Or do you think there was just a little bit of green going around the table? Well, if grown-ups get jealous and are materialistic, we can't expect children to see somebody have a shiny new bike or go on a better vacation and not wish for it. And it's okay to say to kids, I know you wish for it. I wish for it, too. That's natural. That's a human emotion. But can we be better than that? Can we make wise decisions? The other thing I'm going to say a lot of times is keep trying, because conversations and discussions with kids are never one-time things. They are ongoing. Parenting's 24/7, 365 days a year, and luckily we get do-overs. Endless do-overs. You don't like how it went today? Do-over. Let's have that conversation again. And you keep doing it till we get it right, hopefully. The next area I want to talk about is modeling. Whether you like it or not, you're a role model all the time. All the good things you do, you're modeling. All the bad things you do, you're modeling. While your children are saying, I hate you, you're the worst parent in the world, they're still copying you, you're still having an impact. While they are apparently rejecting you, trying to be totally different than you, you are still having an impact. And you never know, sometimes till days, months, years later, the impact that your modeling has had on them. So realize that you are always teaching, and one of the things you can do to increase the power of your positive role modeling, it's going to sound crazy, but talk to yourself out loud. We all do some pretty great things as adults. We all make good value decisions a lot of times, but we make them privately. Our children never know we've made them. When we help an elderly person in the street, we just help that elderly person. That's it. End of discussion. But if your child is with you and you say, you know what, that felt pretty darn good. I'm not usually so patient with older people, but, you know, before I know it, I'm going to be one of those people. And it felt really nice. And look how they shone at how I helped them. It took so little to get them to smile. Kind of made my day, too, didn't it? That little talking out loud, although it sounds like lunacy when you're running a narrative of your life all day long, it makes an impact on children. To say on Friday afternoon, as you're about to go call grandma or grandpa who's under the weather, you know what? Such a busy day, but I have to find time to call grandma or grandpa because this phone call means so much to them. And they're sitting alone, and the snow has got them snowed in Chicago or in Toronto or wherever they're snowed in. Wouldn't they like a phone call? Maybe I'll put one of you guys on the phone so you can talk. Make your internal value script external so that your children benefit from hearing it. And finally, look for famous examples that you do value. The newspaper and the media are always going to find the bad guys. They are going to do endless days of Roger Clemens when he throws his bat. We are going to hear about every ruthless dictator and every corrupt CEO. But every once in a while, we're also going to hear about Tzedekim. We are going to hear about the people of our day and time who are incredible role models for our children. And they may come from the secular world, and they may come from, God willing, from our own religious heritage. But wherever they are, find them and tout them for your children and underscore them, because you can't depend that the media is going to say, look what wonderful things this person did. One of the nicest things that happened to me this year, my eldest son is applying to colleges, which is kind of irrelevant to the story, although it wound up going in his college essay. And in ninth grade, he read Natan Sharansky's book. So this year, Sharansky spoke in New York, And I have to tell you, when a 17-year-old boy who usually is hocking you about getting the car, can he have money for going to a concert, and all the things you don't approve of, says, do you think you could get me tickets to go after school into, I don't live in Manhattan, after school into Manhattan to go hear Sharansky speak? I said to his father, you drop everything, you get him those tickets. And he, when he comes back from hearing Natan Sharansky speak and is waxing eloquent about From the Gulag to his latest book is about touting the power of democracy, and what an impact this has had on him, this is a golden moment to say, you just met a hero. You met an incredible, whether I agree with his politics, whether I disagree, you met a modern day superhero. And you know what he said when I said this to my 17 and a half year old son? He said to me, next I want to hear Elie Wiesel speak. If we point out the right heroes to our children, the heroes that have values, that teach what we want to teach, they will look for more like them. And we have to get beyond the, you know, I turned on the news. If I hear Brad Pitt or Jennifer Aniston's name one more time this week, I'm going to be nauseous. We have to look beyond the heroes that the magazines and the media tell us are heroes. And we will find them. And our children will resonate with them. And even my middle son, who's not so politically charged, is an absolute sports buff. So even to find the athletes who do give of themselves, who are self-effacing, who would never do anything to be in the middle of a media circus, that also is a way to underscore values. Just a little thing about money. Just a little, you know, on one foot, I'll regel chad, a little about money, because, you know, the topic is raising children with values in a world of materialism, and the truth is I think materialism is all about a lot more than just money, but money's a biggie, and we're all struggling with it in our communities. And just like everything else that we have to teach our children, it is so much easier to do if we start little than if we try to teach about the value of money when they're already carrying wallets. We have to start teaching about money before they have it in their pockets. If you wait until they're carrying it themselves and paying their own way, way too late. So the first thing is start teaching early. The second is you have to realize that your words and actions make a huge difference. If you are talking about the value of money and you have to be careful and you want to spend wisely, but you impulse buy with your children, you live beyond your means or go on a fancy vacation and then say, oh, but we can't buy any books, we have no money. You have to realize, what are you teaching in your actions? And you have to be sure that your actions match your words, especially because at the same age that children come into their own financially, that we do give them some rights with their own money, that they're out in the world, they're in the adolescence where into their adolescence where adolescents are absolutely fantastic finders of hypocrisy. They will look for the chink in your armor, and if you are telling them, be wise, be saveful, be mindful, be planful with your money, and you are not, they will catch you. They will absolutely find where you are not walking the walk and talking the talk if you are telling them one thing and doing another. Watch carefully for the incredible power of keeping up with the Joneses or the Schwartzes or the Cohens or whoever we want to call it. It is subtle, but it is there. My youngest son loves this show on TV, The House Makeover? The show I mean, where they make over a house? The Extreme Home Makeover. So after about the second or third time it was on TV, I have a nice house. I don't have the best house in the neighborhood. I don't live in the most affluent section, but we have everything we would need in our house. So my 12-year-old says, why can't we write to Extreme Home Makeover? Let's have them come. We need a den. You know, wouldn't it be nice? You always said you want a bedroom on the first floor. Let's write them a letter. I put my arm around him and I said, sweetheart, what have you noticed about the families on Extreme Home Makeover? One family had a blind child. Another family lost a parent. Another family was living, literally in a hovel. I said, thank God we have everything we need. Well, maybe, God willing, one day we'll have enough to build the dense, but we're not. Thank God we are not an Extreme Home Makeover family. Thank God. It's an opportunity to teach that lesson all the time when kids come and say, why can't we, how come we don't, is that we have to help them focus, again, without being Pollyannish, but we have to help them focus on, you know what, we're not doing too bad. We're doing okay, and we have an awful lot. Think ahead. Prepare for the inevitable. Before everybody is packing for Pesach and going for their 9 days to the Caribbean, to the Riviera, to the, if you're not going, again, you know, Erev Seder is not the time to announce to the kids, by the way, we're not in that class, we don't do those things. You have to give kids time because, again, it is very, very natural for young children, older children, to be resentful, disappointed, sad when they can't live at the same level as the people around them, as the most affluent, or the, whether it's by your choice or whether it's all you're able to do. So by preparing kids ahead of time, thinking ahead of time, it can be very helpful. I'm not going to talk about, there are many books out there about how to put children on budgets and how to teach them financial responsibility. And the truth is there are different schools of thought about it. My feeling is that, again, if you start young and start little, that if you start with small allowances and small amounts of money, that it is so much easier to teach a child to manage a dollar a week when they are in, you know, third grade or second grade, than to start with, you know, the $10 a week or $25 or $40 or $50 a week that kids are getting in high school and expect them to be able to manage it. And that if you start early saying, here are the parameters, what goes to tzedakah, to charity, what goes to savings, and what goes to spending, that those are the three basic piles that money goes into, that you can give kids the structures that helps them save. And I happen to come from a family of financiers, you know, in accounting and in that field, and it's actually been wonderful to talk with kids about, well, what is interest and what is stocks, and somebody gave them an Israeli bond, so what is a bond and how do bonds work? And I think it's actually a very good part of a child's education to learn about their diversified portfolio, and that there are different kinds of money, and that what you have in your pocket is not the same as what you have in the bank, and that they have different purposes and different uses. Okay, the last part I want to talk about, and be sure we have, I'm running out of time, because it sounds like it doesn't fit here. The last thing I want to say is that we teach our children values in a materialistic world when we set limits. And this is good. People are going to say, what, set limits, discipline, where does discipline go in here? It goes in here because if we do not set limits on our children, if we do not discipline them, then they have a sense that they are constantly and forever the center of the universe, that everything can and should come to them, that everything revolves around them, and that is the opposite of a child who grows up with true core values, who understands and believes that we are all citizens of the world, that we are each responsible for each other and not just for our own selfish needs. Limits help children learn to delay gratification. My disaster is when a parent comes to me with an adolescent child and says, they were really fine up till now, Dr. Novi, because we never said no. Now that we have to say no, we have trouble. Up until now, they were a great kid. All right, if you didn't say no till adolescence, do I have a job cut out ahead of me? And so do you as parents. Start saying no early on, very early on. And when parents say, but I can't, it breaks my heart, I hate to. You know, here's what I want to say to you as parents. The world is not always going to give your child yes. It's a cruel world out there, and your child is going to hear no. I don't know about you. I'd rather they hear it first from me, someone who loves them more than life itself. I don't want their first experience at no to come from the cruel world. I want them to learn it in the context of a parent's love. I want them to understand that just because you can't have everything you want at the moment you want, not only can you survive it, you'll be better for it, and I still love you, even though I'm withholding something. I'm doing it literally to help you grow and for your benefits. Limits help children learn that there are others with needs, and limits and consequences teach children cause and effect. If I do this, this is what happens. If I do my homework, I get my allowance. Or if I do my homework, I get to watch TV. How are we going to become responsible adults if we never learn that our actions lead to a certain and specific reaction? And I guess I want to leave you with the notion of the values of caring that on this slide I actually believe go from the bottom up. And that's that the first thing we're responsible really to teach our children is empathy, is to be able to put themselves in another person's shoes, to be able to feel what another person feels. And we do this constantly, saying, how do you think your little brother feels? Don't you think grandma would like a kiss? We're constantly, from a very young age, teaching them, but we can't stop at the young age. And it's much harder to talk about the empathic response when kids get older and to say, how do you think Jesse feels when you don't let him play in your ball game? How do you think Sarah feels when you invited her two best friends but not her to the party? And we have to address those failures of empathy. Then we have to teach our children responsibility. That it's very nice to say, gee, my heart breaks when the world's heart breaks. But the next step is, okay, so then what do I do about it? I have to be a responsible person and say, it's up to me to do tikkun olam, to correct the problems in the world. I can't look to anybody else if I don't look to myself. And then going up this care backwards, everything's an acronym because I can't remember anything otherwise, is I have to take action. I can't just say, yes, I'm responsible, I have to do something, I have to act, and I have to act in a way that's actually going to bring about change. And finally, I must belong. I have to recognize that I am part of a community, that I am not an island. It's not just about my family, it's not just about my needs, but I belong to a larger whole. And when we do that, we truly raise children with values, even in the context of a very, very challenging environment. And I think that when we do that, we not only create caring children, but we truly create citizens of the world who have the ability to give us the best nachas a parent can have. You know, it's great when they get good grades. It's nice when they win the sports match. Nothing. I really believe that as a parent, nothing has ever made my heart sing as when somebody tells you, what a nice boy. That's what we want. So on that note, let me stop. I know that we're running very, very late. We have a few minutes. And thank you all very much. And take comments and questions. Yes?
I came a little bit late, but sort of covered this. I have two very important questions. One is that I'm actually been blessed, but I have so much material comfort, and we share that with my children. And they live in a beautiful house, and they have great vacations. We have a cottage, they have so many wonderful things. But there's a side of me that is terrifying that all the beautiful materialism that they live in is corrupting to the soul. And I want to know, is it sort of almost by definition?
No. No, I mean, none of us have to go throw out all our stuff and be poor. You can raise children with incredible values. There, again, we recently, in our neck of the woods, had highlights of, a family was highlighted of an incredible benefactor, philanthropist, who's extremely, extremely wealthy. And they were writing the profile of the story. So I shared it with the kids I work with and with my children at home, saying, do you see? You can have a huge amount of money, and you can be a ganef, you can be a robber baron, or you can be a really wonderful person. The money doesn't decide who and what you are. And I think that in some ways it's harder, you know, you have to make the extra effort if you have so much to teach children the value of it, because they come to expect it. Children who work hard for it know the value of it. They had to work hard for it. But I don't think it comes, it necessarily follows that if my children have everything, 3 minutes? If my children have everything, then they're going to grow up spoiled.
Sorry.
The second point.
The question is kind of related. When you make rewards and punishments tied to material things, as you said, you get allowance for doing your homework, or maybe you get money taken away, or
right,
physical things taken or given, or
right,
as rewards and punishment, does that also, does that sort of emphasize a materialism that
okay, so the answer is that people raised their hands before in the room of how many people here work for pay outside their home. Any one of you want to give up your paycheck because you think it's fostering your materialism and you would rather just work for a pat on the back from your employer? I'm not prepared to do that. I don't think in and of itself. However, for raising children, it is critical that we pair any tangible monetary, material reinforcement with what really matters, which is our pride, our joy, our love, our excitement, and that we not, one of the problems that happens is that, like, we up the ante. So it'll be, well, you know, Ma, last time I got 100 on a spelling test, I got rollerblades, so this time I want a car. You know, last time I did well on my report card, we went to Disney, so it's a Cancun this time. You know, you got to make very small material rewards and not these huge ones that then, like, where do you go from here? The other thing I prefer, if I'm going to use material rewards at all with kids, is I like giving them the opportunity to use it rather than ownership. So, for example, I will say to a parent, if you want to bring Xbox into the house, they're not getting Xbox as the reward. They're not earning Xbox. They're earning Xbox access. You own the Xbox. The parent owns the Xbox. The reward is not that Xbox is coming into the house. What you're earning is time to have access to it. You're not earning a pair of rollerblades. You're earning rollerblade rental usage. So that it's not the materialism so much as the activity that you're gaining. And one of the things that we as parents have to look at is, this is the next talk on time management, is are we paying our children not to spend time with them? Are we saying, I'll give you rollerblades because I'm too busy to play Candyland? The best rewards that we can give our children is ourselves. The best reward, no matter what age they are, is giving them time with you doing activities. But we're so busy that sometimes it's much more easy to say, I'll buy you those Nikes you wanted, you know?
You said that we're role models for our children, and this is the hardest age that you think for children to grow up in. And I think that's because there's a lot of emphasis and aiming at children to be these material, greedy, wanting everything, self-centered people. If we just sort of accept it and try to override it with values while we accept society as it is, what kind of role models are we for our children?
I think it's an excellent point, and I think that to the extent that all of us make choices in our lives where we don't accept it, whether it's through activism or whether it's through works of chesed where we say, I am going to right the wrongs of the world in some little way, that we are very important role models to our children. And if we don't do that, in other words, you can't raise children saying, you have to fix the world. You can't just think about yourself, but you sit at home and watch TV and say, gee, football game's good tonight. Honey, can you bring me a beer? You can't do that. You absolutely can't do that. So we do have to show in our actions that injustices, inequities, these are things that we will work, again, in whatever way works for you to get beyond. Yes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The question is, what do you do when grandparents don't support your values? So you may say, we don't buy brand names, we're proud Kmart shoppers, but grandma's designer labels only. One of the things that parents forget about children is they are remarkably savvy about what I call the rules of the room. Children learn from a very early age what they can do at grandma's that they can't do at mom's, whose friend's house they have to take the shoes off before they walk on the carpet, where you can jump on the sofa and where you can't. It is perfectly all right to identify that difference for our children and to say, grandma likes to give you designer clothes. It gives her a lot of pleasure, and we won't stop grandma even though we don't buy those kind of clothes usually. But it's a nice treat that you get them every once in a while from grandma. And, of course, you know, the right thing to do when you get a gift from someone is to say thank you and end it there. And children, again, will be remarkably able to understand that just because grandma buys me that doesn't mean mom and dad are going to buy you. Would it be easier if we were all on the same page? Of course. Right. Well, again, that's just, I know we have to stop, but that's exactly the same as a child who would be asking grandma for 17 ice cream sundaes. A parent would have to step in and say, it's very nice, right, it's very nice, but you can't have too much ice cream, you'll get a bellyache. Thank you.